I'm rejuvenating interests and I.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Be Better podcast. We are on location today, broadcasting from Playtry here in Eagan, Minnesota. Don't know where Eagan is? Well, it's just south of...
South Metro.
South of the Twin Cities. South of the Twin Cities, Minnesota. We're actually right next to an outlet mall, so...
I saw Saks Fifth Avenue.
Is that where you're going after this?
Sure thing.
Okay. And for those of you that don't recognize the snarky voice to my left, that's my old friend Devin Palmer.
Devin Palmer, Edina Realty.
Oh, Jesus. Don't make me regret this immediately, okay?
I am 100% here for self-promotion.
It's obvious for how much you were pimping this thing out on Facebook the other day, which is yesterday, by the way. And it's like, and thanks for tagging me on that, because now I open up my Facebook, it's like 75 notifications, and it's you just basically going back and forth. And by the way, we're not going to slander or whatever you were thinking about doing there all day
long. You
know what?
I apologize. I apologize for promoting your podcast, for volunteering to come on, spending my time to come on your podcast, and stimulating online engagement with it.
Oh, my God. We've gotten this far for how long without you?
I'm trying to help the numbers.
If you understand that this is like your second chance, that you're here to redeem yourself from your non-vocal self last time was very quiet with singular answers. And this is you coming back. This is me being your friend and saying, Devin, I'd like to give you a second shot. Let's see how this works.
The people called out for it. I answered the call.
Oh, my God.
Here I am.
Who died and made you Brett Sutton?
Listen, first of all, do not appreciate that comparison.
Well, get used to it.
That man is not healthy. He is a husky fella.
Oh, well, I wasn't referring to that side of it, but, you know, I was going to go with the self-righteous triathlon Jesus side.
He has admirable self-confidence.
You know, somebody's got to do it. If you don't believe in yourself, who are you going to believe in?
He's the Trump of try. He's got so much self-belief.
You should put that in a t-shirt. I've never heard that before.
Oh, he really... If you're going to say wild stuff, you got to speak with confidence.
I suppose you got to be right up there.
No.
So since we last talked, you have produced a small human.
Sure did.
Congratulations, by the way, on that.
My wife and I had a daughter August 9th.
Congratulations.
Thank you, sir.
You want to share the name?
Svea.
Svea, spelled S-V-E-A?
S-V-E-A.
I remembered. Give me up for that one, huh? And how has that changed your life?
Completely.
Yeah? In a better way? Obviously in a better way, I'm hoping. Because if it's not in a better way, then you better just check yourself, because Thea will kick you out of your house, or out of her house.
No, it's been amazing.
Yeah? How so? What's been the biggest thing that you've noticed?
It's, you just care more about something else than any of your other nonsense.
Like what? Give me an example.
Well, the thing I've been thinking about is how parents participate in triathlon, especially if you've got a super young kid. Like, from a practical standpoint, because we're super tired and we're not resting at all. And then, why? I guess you'll probably need, I'll need an outlet after a while. But it's like, it's pretty consuming.
Because you have been, like, we've known each other for years, unfortunately, and you have seen me produce a couple of small humans in that time frame.
No, we met, you already had Stephanie, your first daughter, and then you proceeded to just knock out three more.
Well, why not, you know, more tax credits and deductions. But, so we, and it's funny because, you know, you talk about that, but we have done a number of training things together with me and a small human. Whether it's been running around the lake, pushing Julian, or, you know, biking in London or Cole. That's got to be some sort of idea of where this comes to, right?
Oh, yeah. When it's 6 months, they can start doing stuff in the burley with you?
Yeah. I mean, like, it's about, like, supporting the neck. And, you know, they make slings and all that kind of crap, but I'm not sure that's where you want to. You know, don't push the envelope on it.
No rush.
But yeah, I mean, it's like, I think it's totally underrated to go out and, you know, average 300 watts on the bike on the Cedar Trail with a huge parachute behind you that is a child's burley.
I've ridden with you a bunch of times with your burley, and then I rode several times with David Thompson with one of his kids in a burley. And you guys were getting the better training. You were going hard.
But it's there. I mean, you find it where you can get it, right?
No.
So, I mean, that's good. But when's the last time you actually did a triathlon?
Not since 2015.
Wow.
No.
So, do you have it back? Do you have it on, like, your radar that you're going to go back to it?
Nah.
No? I mean, like, how, not even as a participant or anything like that?
Not in the immediate future. I think someday, probably when this kid is a little bit older, I still think about it.
Yeah. Does it come to your head, like, when you go back, the pressure that is either put on yourself or that you feel might be externally placed upon you to be back like the 25-year-old Devin?
I don't think of the pressure too much. I think more like what makes me interested in going back is knowing like I didn't go my fastest times.
Yeah.
And that just makes me so crabby.
I mean, do you feel like you accomplished everything you wanted to accomplish?
No, absolutely not.
Give me the top two things that you didn't get to do that you wish you could have done.
The biggest things I look back on are my, like, I never delivered a really, really, oh, please, Christopher just drank coffee right into the microphone.
You're welcome. Yep, continue.
I never put together a good Ironman, and then I had a one or two pretty good half Ironmans, but it's like just to look back at that and be like, okay, I went pretty fast on medium good performances, but what if I had done my absolute best?
Yeah.
So that just cracks me.
So that would be that. So you would love to go back and be able to put a better long game together.
No, because my fastest Ironman, I swam relatively poorly. I blew up after about 30 miles on the bike, so I was just kind of on and off throughout the bike. I ran well the first half, jogged for like 8 miles, and then ran well again.
Okay.
So it's like...
Where was that?
That was Florida in 2011.
All right.
And it's like, gee whiz, if I had run well the whole time, if I had rode steady the whole time, it would have been a lot faster.
Yeah. So do you place the Ironman accomplishments over the things you did in short course? Because, I mean, you had some pretty, I would say, pretty remarkable accomplishments in short course. I mean, fastest bike split at Nationals. That was, and you won that, you know, incredible frame.
Short course, was 2009.
2009, and you were third overall.
Third overall, got the fastest bike split. Blue was sponsoring USAT at that time.
Yep.
And, yeah, they gave out a free frame.
But the question begs is do you, as an athlete, or did you as an athlete, did you place long course success over short course success?
I think so. Long course, I think I suffer from what a lot of people suffer from. Like, you look at the times at long course, and they mean a lot more. Like, ooh, I would have loved to break 4 hours and a half.
Mm-hmm.
Or I would have loved to go about 8:30 in a full. So it just those numbers bug me that I didn't achieve what I thought I could have achieved.
So it's not so much about, so maybe I'm asking this wrong, but it's not so much about the fact that you hold them at a greater esteem, but the fact that you just never were able to reach them.
No, because short course, I achieved most of what I was looking to do. I won several local races. I didn't ever think I was going to be a super high level competitor at the Olympic distance.
Yeah.
Just because I didn't have quite the swim chops to race with those guys, and I definitely didn't have the run chops.
But you had, I mean, I watched you race some draft legal races and came reasonably close on a couple of different opportunities, but, you know, that could have been something that could have been an avenue for you.
Yeah, because strategically, if my best day I swim with the pack and ride really well and maybe get a tiny gap or ride with the main group, there's going to be guys in that who are post-collegiate runners who are just going to smoke me.
Yeah. So, I mean, I can see that. And that's a difficult place to be.
No.
I mean, unless you went like, I would say like the super short course and you didn't have, like, there was not enough real estate for people to try and track you down, and you were able to get a big gap because you were a strong biker.
No.
You know, I mean, you bike collegiately for the University of Minnesota as well, you know, so that was, I think that was a big, big, strong piece of your background.
Yeah, that was helpful, but I wasn't very elite when I was cycling at college. I was just learning the basics when I was doing it those couple of years.
Yeah.
Yep.
So we talk about Ironman. We talk about that coming up. We got Kona coming up.
Kona's coming soon.
And you know, I think the best thing about Kona is always the pontification of what's going to happen and where this is going to go. And it seems in the past years that the 70.3 has kind of created the blueprint for who's going to do well there. So have you been kind of following the 70.3 series the lead up to Kona?
I did look a little bit at Worlds just a few weeks ago.
Okay. Anything stand out to you there?
Yeah, this random Norwegian guy just smoked Alistair Brownlee out of nowhere.
I saw that. And it's like, where does that come from?
Who let him out of the country?
Well, first of all, did he do well because Alistair was focused for something else?
Oh, I don't know.
I mean, that would be...
Is Alistair doing Kona?
He's on the list. He's registered.
Oh, okay.
But, you know, if you in that vein of... I don't think the pros at that level may differentiate from being dialed for 70.3 or dialed for Kona. And no. It's like being dialed for Kona is mostly being dialed for heat and humidity, which that, you know, I'm sure all the cool, crisp, moist air in Britain right now is not doing well, unless he's somewhere else for Ali.
Yeah, maybe he's doing a camp.
I would imagine.
All those UK guys go down to the Canary Islands, is
yeah.
it?
Yeah. Yeah, so that would probably make sense for him. But if you think about Danielle Reif, you know, she's done the...
She's real good.
She has been better than average.
Real good.
Over the last couple of years. And you know, again, 170.3. And so...
Hey, Chris, who's her coach?
Huh?
Are you her coach?
I am her coach.
Oh, yeah. You? Or is it that fellow you mentioned earlier?
I coach... well, so, number one, it's not about the coach. It's about the athlete.
Okay.
I ever bragged that I was... I never bragged about you.
Didn't you?
No, I didn't.
Didn't you?
I didn't. Why would I, first of
Didn't
all?
Didn't you?
No. Only to my family. No, I mean, it was, I think that's a whole other show in and of itself. And we've breached on that topic, but she has done extremely well over the last couple of years and does not seem to have a weakness showing at this point in time. I mean, she's kind of, you know, it was interesting to see before her, I would say dynasty, you saw the Rinne dynasty.
Yep.
But Rinne had a weakness. You know, the swim was always something that if you could gap her enough, put enough on her on the bike, you may be able to get something out there.
Well, Rinne, she would have had a much longer dynasty if it wasn't for Chrissy Wellington. Because Chrissy Wellington was like the dominant force for a few years. She stepped away. Then Kerfrey had her kind of year in the sun. But then I think she only had 1 year before Daniela reached her full potential.
Yeah. Well, Rinne, would she take two or three championships?
I think she only has one Kona.
I think she's got at least two.
These are knowable facts.
We should probably just know these. Yeah, you would think we should know these things. But
does she have two? I thought it was just 1 year.
Mm-mm. No, because she was slated, I think it was for the third, which would have been a big number for her. And then she got smoked by the car training, and so she wasn't able to be there. Then she went and had her baby, and that obviously creates life changes.
Yep, as I've noticed.
Yeah, I still see her training. I still see her, not personally, you don't like visually see her running the streets of South Minneapolis, but, you know, online. And you know, I think she is, I don't know if she's as much of a threat because of that, but...
I don't think you can be if Daniela is swimming front pack and she's a monster on the bike, one of the probably best ever. And then she can run sub-3 in Kona.
That's crazy.
Like, you can't come at her with... Like, if you're a medium swimmer and a pretty good to medium biker, you can't win with just a fast run.
No, because there's not enough time. There's not enough time there.
No, especially if the stud biker is going to run a sub-3.
Yeah, you just... that's the thing about Danielle. She is a complete unit. So at some point in time, there will be some sort of... crack in the armor.
Yep.
Whether that's age, whether that's just, you know, overtraining or something. But I don't think that's this year. She hasn't shown anything to show that.
No weakness.
No weaknesses. So outside of her, is there anybody else on the radar that you think might even contend against her?
There's that UK gal, Lucy Charles.
Mm-hmm.
So she's super fast on the swim. She can ride really well. I don't think she runs quite as well as Reef.
Not as well, but she's not, like, you know, she's not running terribly.
No.
They could be a good one.
Could have a good battle.
They could. And it would be, you know, we saw glimpses of what Sarah True can do.
Yep.
And, you know, she basically just kind of didn't have things quite put together. And, you know, did you see the video of her basically collapsing in like the
last? That was at Frankfurt this year?
Yes. It was she would have taken the title. She was in the lead and then basically had that kind of Julie Moss moment at the end. You know, when you think about how many athletes that's happened to over the years, it's that's how Karen Smyers won. She passed Paula Nieby-Frazier.
Oh.
And, you know, basically just had the wobble legs and then just basically dropped, and Karen Smyers went right by her and won. And that was in 95, 96.
Karen Smyers, didn't she come back and just start winning stuff again?
She has been competing. Well, so her sister has been nonstop winning in the age group range. And Karen has... She hasn't been competing in, I don't think as a professional, but amateur. But she is, what she did win is she won two bouts of cancer.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Good she for is, her. I mean, you think about like that family is like rock tough. They're like coal miners. And she is like a super nice person. I met her a couple of times. She's like super nice. And, but yeah, I think her cancer has been her big win. She's had a couple bouts of cancer that she's come back from.
Because in her day, wasn't her big claim to fame, she won short course and long course?
Yep, kind of like Leanda did.
Jeez.
You know, but I think that's not so uncommon. You know, you see a lot of the guys that have won Kona were world champion. Frodo,
yep.
You know, that's right there. And I think that kind of, you know, that bodes for who's coming up on the men's side too. You know, I think the contention that what you see there or who you see that's going to contend this year, I still go with somebody who's fresh off the ITU circuit.
Yeah.
I still think Ali's got it in him. I think he's got more mojo than most. It's just a matter of, you know, can he put it all together?
So he's maybe racing Kona or for sure racing Kona?
So, you know, Ironman's incredibly great for showing you all this stuff, and no one's got a printed athlete guide, and we are a little bit too far out for people to come out. And pros can drop last minute, too. Yep. So we would pontificate on names that are not even going to show up on the pier. But right now, he is on the start list.
Okay.
So, you know, so I see that. I didn't see if Javi was on there as well.
Did he race an Ironman yet?
Think so.
He's a very pretty man.
He's handsome. He's also super, super nice.
Good for him.
And so is Alistair, by the way.
Yeah.
You know, dude, I've told you my Alistair story, why I think he's the bomb of all athletes. So have I told you the story?
I don't think so. Have your listeners heard?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure if they actually were listening when I told it, if okay. I did. So, but we were at Worlds, ITU Worlds in London, 2013. And this was the race between Johnny and Javi. Mm. Remember that one where they had the 1K full on sprint back, and then it was like the dive at the tape and in the blue carpet. Do you remember that one?
Nope. I'm saying that I do, but I don't.
You got to go Google it if you haven't. So 2013. It's like the last 1K there was great. Now Alistair was a little bit injured, but he was still racing the next day. And because I'm a coach, I can do whatever the hell I want and don't have to worry about, you know, being in bed on time. And so I was at the pub with, I think, the team doc, Andy Gherkin, and we were sitting at the Swan right off of on the north side. And all of a sudden Andy goes, "Hey, there, I think that's Alistair." And I look over and there's Alistair sitting like at a table with like a half dozen, you know, young girls and just putting a couple of pints back.
Nothing but respect.
And it's like 10:30, 11 o'clock at night.
Nothing but respect for
that
guy.
And they were racing Worlds the next day.
Yes.
And I was like, my boy, right there.
Yes.
Like, that's some cojones.
Triathletes, don't be a dork.
Don't, like, go out and just hoop it up. So
be Alistair Brownlee.
I think from that point on, I think that really got me. I love that part about him. And whenever he runs, he looks like his like bottom half is running faster than his top half. If you look at him, like he's kind of leaned backwards, like he can't quite catch up with himself. You ever seen that?
He's so fast, but for a marathon, does his technique hold up, Coach Chris? Talk about his biomechanics. Talk about the demands of the Ironman marathon.
Well, I mean, yeah. So number one, he does run the entire marathon, which is a big feat in and of itself. I think that's the If you look at the biggest misnomer that people have in training for Ironman, it's the fact that most people believe they can run the entire marathon at Ironman.
That's not correct?
No, it's a fallacy. At some point, you got to prepare at some point in time you're going to walk. Whether it's a short bit, whether it's short little bits, but at some point in time you're going to walk because the vast majority of age groupers cannot run an entire Ironman marathon. They can run a marathon straight out, but I can tell you that watching, training, hundreds of athletes.
We've watched so much walking at Ironman Wisconsin over the years.
It has. And it's
so,
like
so much.
It's Wisconsin, Arizona. It's every Ironman. And so it would be naive for an athlete to go and train and not have at least some level of plan B or something that you practice where you have incorporated some level of walking, whether it's walking through the aid stations to get nutrition or, you know, going the first 6-8 miles and then taking like a 30-second or a 1-minute walk break, whatever it is, you have to anticipate it because most athletes can't. Alistair Ken, you know, I saw that, and I think that he is a, you know, he's a professional athlete. He's a unique individual, and those, there's no way you're going to create or clocks a sub-3-hour marathon at any time when you're, you know, have substantial walk breaks in there.
No, no way.
And how people do that? I mean, a part of it is, I think, is it's genetic. You know, I'm not going to do it, no matter how much I trained ever. That was never going to happen. For you, I mean, no matter how much you trained, you probably were going to get close, but genetically you are more built as an athlete. You had a better genetic makeup as an athlete than I did. I think that showed, you know, that showed in a number of different ways, but not everybody's got it. And so to go in and not train for that,
no.
Naive. So I think he's going to put it together. I think he can put it together. I would like to see it. And I would love to have my theory of the fact that, you know, the pathway to Kona is paved through the ITU. Cause I think it holds water and I think it's true.
Is it, I think about elite marathoning a little bit too. And traditionally it would be that the track guys, Kenenisa Bekele or Paul Tergat, like they'd have their career on the track, be a gold medalist, be a champ in the 5K, 10K. And then they basically retire to the marathon and they would take over the marathon world. But now we've seen a little bit of a trend where guys see more financial reward in the marathon. So they start that closer to the peak of their career, more in their mid to late 20s.
Yep.
And we've seen that world record keeps dropping and dropping and dropping. And I wonder, and this is, I'm giving you a counterpoint to your theory here. Traditionally in triathlon, if the absolute best talent, like the biggest engines, have been going over to the Olympic track and chasing that dream, and then later kind of retiring to Ironman, is it just because the top talent starts there and then moves over when they're done with the ITU world, or is it because they learn something special by doing ITU?
I think, well, it's a good question, and it bodes a couple of different pathways of answering. One would definitely be the funding pathway. You know, there is, and a lot of these Europeans are finding funding from their government and from their national federations.
They get on that sweet, sweet gravy train.
Well, it's true. And like, if you're going to be training hard, you need to have some substantial backing. Yep. And consistent backing. And if you're racing on your own dime and chasing down the money, which really isn't all there in Ironman prize purses versus sponsorships, which there's not a lot of great sponsorships out there on the short course side. There's more on the long course side because there's more advertising dollars there. Especially, you know, domestically here. I still think that the short course is the pathway, because I don't know that anybody has just trained long course, just gone out and said, I'm gonna be Ironman champion. And we've had people try. We've had a lot of Americans try. And I remember watching, when I was racing, a guy by the name of Cam Widoff. And Cam would, like, he was like the top American, but he was always like 8, 9. You know, he's never great. He was good enough, but never good enough to get there, but never good enough to contend.
Yeah.
And, you know, in the Americans that we have had that have won have been, I mean, we haven't had an American winner since Tim DeBoom. That's
really?
2001, 2002, yeah.
Yeah,
we had Ben Hoffman, who came second in a year that was a complete anomaly.
Second. Has Tio been second?
I don't know. Teal's been second. He's been up there.
Okay.
But again, Hoffman and Teal, where'd they come from?
Yep. Sure, of course.
You know, and
yeah. And Potts.
And Potts, too. You know, Potts has been up there, and he's traditionally been close.
He's so old now, but he's still so fast.
Yeah, but if you think about Andy, like, you know, not only the fact is he wearing a weird headband and, like, you know, he was the champion of compression socks, which don't even get me started on why compression socks don't even need to be worn or should not be worn and while you're racing. But, I mean, the thing that Andy's had, you know, kind of, I think, pushing behind him is that huge tier sponsorship. And he's been able to pull the, you know, the fastest swim split out and, you know, claim a huge prize purse with fastest swim split. Not only from the race itself, but also from his sponsors. Say, yeah. Hey, you know, Tier says, hey, go out and get the fastest swim split. We're going to, you know, we're going to toss a half mil at you. Done. You know, who cares what the rest of the day looks like?
The prize purse for winning the race is only 100 G. So
isn't that crazy? But you can win Fortnite and that's
millions. Work with millions.
$3 million.
Yeah, but a lot more people are interested in Fortnite.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Versus triathlon?
Yeah, but people are interested in other things that don't get that amount of money.
Yeah, but people,
you don't win anything. You win a lapel pin if you try and if you win the puzzle on MPR, right? You stump Will Shorts, the puzzle master. You win a lapel pin. That's arguably they have a listener database that's wide ranging.
I think Fortnite has a better business model than Will Shorts.
Yeah, that's probably true. But again, I think that it's a little bit skewed as to how we, you know, how we pay people. And obviously that was more of a singular item. I don't think you're going to see $3 million being paid out annually to the winner of the Fortnite Super Battle Royale with cheese. I don't know what it's called.
Well, in this era, it seems like a lot of things come and go really rapidly.
Yeah.
So we'll see if Fortnite is still one of the big go-to participation games long term.
Well, yeah, if that's the game itself. But I was watching ESPN the other night, and I actually saw where they were covering live stream gaming, like on the show. They were covering live stream gaming, and it was like teams versus teams, like six young little kids from here versus six little young kids from here. And they're like, you know, they got T-shirts. It's almost as bad as watching like professional bowling championships.
It's a whole new world.
Oh my God! But you know how we reward sports and the monetary numbers that we arbitrarily choose or that are chosen for that are just odd. You know, because the winner of the Tour de France only gets $250,000 now.
Yeah, but the bulk of their money comes from their team and the. The team gets all their cash from sponsors.
Yeah, and there are that's just the overall win. And there are premiums that happen every day and along the way. Yeah. But still, if you think like just dollar for dollar,
it is weird that the tour has such clout. They can just say it's worth it for you. We're basically not going to pay you. It's worth it for you just to be here. So you figure it out.
Yeah.
That's clout.
It's 100 years of being there. Also, the funny thing is that most people that win it don't actually take the money for themselves. They distribute it to their team.
Pay it out to the boys.
Yeah, I mean, that's what Lance used to do. He said, but back in Lance's day, he won $1 million. I mean, now it's a quarter of that. So, you know, why? That's another conversation for another time, which bodes, you know, are the prize purses promoting the sport or are they a deterrent to the sport?
Well, I look back, for most of the time I was racing pro, if I had won Ironman Wisconsin, I think some years it was like $4,500, otherwise it was mostly about $5,000, and there were years that might have been a little bit higher, but for the bulk of my career, if I had achieved the biggest dream for a Midwest pro, win Ironman Wisconsin, which is that would have been an out-of-this-world feat for me to accomplish.
Yep.
$5,000.
And so now... Some people might see that as like $5,000, but break down the costs that you would have incurred leading up to that.
Well, to achieve that, you're not working a proper job. You're working whatever scrappy thing you can to make a subsistence living. That's what I was doing with
shilling at a local bike shop,
coaching, always doing this that.
Yep. You gotta hustle.
Got to hustle around and make some cash, and then you're paying. For everything, you know, because if you're on the gravy train as a European ITU sponsored child, Mm-hmm. You know, your a lot of your travel and equipment, like a lot of things are taken care of. But for those of us out in the real world, it was, if you can find someone who's interested in helping you, like Quintana Roo helped me out for a few years. But at the lower levels, it's like a sponsorship might mean a discount.
Yeah.
Sponsorship doesn't even necessarily mean free equipment. So it's like over the course of the year, you're still spending most of what an age group athlete would spend to get the high-end stuff. You know, you're still spending for all the support stuff, for coaching or for physical therapy or massage. So you have similar expenses, but you don't have, you're not working a job where you're making a good income. So
you might win Ironman Wisconsin and be a net negative.
Oh, absolutely.
Especially if you had to fly there.
Right.
Because you were just driving.
Yeah, I could drive over and
maybe crash with some friends because you have, you know, have some friends over there. So you would save some bucks there. But if you were, let's say, to fly in, have to pay for a hotel, maybe a rental car, I mean, you're almost
it's a scrappy life.
Yeah.
Well, and if you think about like a mid-level tri bike now, is $5,000, and to go high end, to get a top tier, you're paying probably close to 10, right?
Yeah, 10, 11, depending upon what kind of accessories you get on it. Like you're talking like higher end wheels, you're talking about power, you're talking about a lot of things, electronic shifting. Everything has gotten more expensive and more technical. But again, you know, that's where, you know, people have to, you know, beg, borrow, and steal for a sponsorship or support or something. So if the money is not there, and you knew this back then even, why do it?
Then I was just a reckless 20-something-year-old, like, what? 401k, get out of my face. What do I need that for?
What do those numbers add up to?
Home ownership, get out of my face. You know, I had no, I just cared about it so much. It was like, that came first. And I was like, oh, who cares? You know, I don't, who cares about making money? Who cares about any other health insurance? Blah, 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 blah. So it just triathlon was, it came first. So I didn't think about accumulating wealth to someday retire or protecting myself with. Well, no, that's a lie. I always had health insurance.
Yeah. Well, you mean you had your parents too. That was a big piece. That definitely does help. And I think that goes, maybe that's why you don't see a lot of old pro triathletes.
Well, if you're comfortable just living that threadbare subsistence lifestyle, like renting here or there, crashing on someone's couch to go to Florida for a few weeks, or if you're comfortable with that into your 30s and 40s, go for it. But you're not really building for anything in the future, because eventually you're gonna have to stop racing. And if you're not a top tier person, there's no, you're just gonna walk away. No one's gonna remember you. You'll have nothing financially to show for it, and you'll just be very tired and very broken down physically.
It's hard. There's not really a great retirement plan.
No.
And especially if you want to do something outside of the sport. You know, I've watched that with Leanda, like trying to figure out where she wants to go, what she wants to do.
It's tough if you wait. Like, I got lulled into it, and I stayed a few years longer than I should have.
Yeah.
But I was still late 20s when I quit, so it was easy enough to pivot and start a new path in life. But I'm thinking if you're if you push it as long as you can and you're like a 38-year-old, and it's like, I haven't had a job on my resume since I was 22. It's like, well, you're 38. Hopefully you're married. Maybe you're not married. It's like, it's not a great look at life to be pushing 40 with nothing built up in life and no, it's hard. It's a harder pivot at 38 than 28, I think.
Yeah, I wish we had a better system to support people. I wish we really did. But I think that kind of goes with a lot of sports, though. I mean, we're not unique.
Yep.
I was talking with some guys last night about just how other sports don't have, like, a retirement program. You know, and how – I think it started off with talking about how there's a class action – not a class action lawsuit, but a lawsuit that is changing how companies deem essential employees – you know, as employees being the people that without them, the company wouldn't exist. Mm-hmm. And they were talking about Lyft and how Lyft and Uber are deeming that their drivers are not an essential part of their
the people who do the service that you offer.
Exactly. So, you know, then we pivoted on that to the WWE mm-hmm. and how they've, you know, been notoriously terrible in treating their athletes as 1099s, basically contractors. So there's no retirement program for professional wrestlers. And basically, if they can create their own dynasty that can roll off of that, you know, the WWE are not helping them do that. You know, like The Rock was not built. He started the WWE, but didn't go further. So the line that I'm trying to draw here is, could you make the argument that professional athletes or the professionals that are racing Ironman, your Daniela Reefs, are they essential to the sport?
I think the market tells us they're not. I think if they go away, I think Ironman toes that line because they know, oh, it's nice to have them here and it gives us a little extra credibility to have these super fast people here. But our core participants and our core interest doesn't really diminish if they just go away. And they've always treated the pros accordingly.
Yeah.
And so they're willing to extend certain luxuries and certain benefits to pros to make life a little bit easier. But I think they're fully aware of that reality. Like, we could not have you here and we're still going to sell out. So why don't you just take your $5,000 and beat it?
So you think that's an interesting harsh reality. Yeah. I mean, I think it's been proven at the short course level. You know, yep. Think about how Lifetime has essentially just ditched its pro field.
Got rid of them.
And
didn't need them.
Yeah, I mean it changes how the event looks and feels.
I think it's way cooler. I think it's a cool factor. It's cooler for the age groupers to say like, oh man, look at what is possible,
yeah.
And to be around, because the age groupers do have a degree of respect and admiration for what pros can achieve, but
they're not aware of what's going on in the pro race during the race. Like
nope.
in the years that, like at, let's take Lifetime Minneapolis. Like in the years you watch that. And participated in it, you never really paid attention to what the pros were doing as an athlete. And the only thing that I thought that the race, and seeing how after the pros have gone, how the race has changed, I think the amenities have maybe been dialed back. You know, you don't have like the big VIP tents, you don't have the big sponsors, you don't have the big expos and yep. live coverage and things like that, which are nice, but not essential. It hasn't changed how many people actually come out and do the race. That's a harsh reality for yeah. someone who just says, I want to be a professional athlete, though.
And I look at triathlon, if you race your heart out for a decade, you know, you're probably going to walk away a little dinged up. You know, like I look at David Thompson, he had tons and tons and tons of injuries, so he walked away pretty dinged up. I was fortunate I didn't have any substantial injuries over my career. But you haven't sustained concussions. You haven't been just completely destroyed. Like, I look at those WWE guys, and it's like, if you're at a low level in that production, you're probably making a good baseline of pay, but you're 1099, so you're getting hammered with taxes, and you're a road dog, so you're around the country 300 days a year,
yep.
and you're getting destroyed physically.
It's true.
And I look at all those sports where you can get concussions, and it's like, make your money as fast as you can. Because you're going to be wrecked, and you might lose your mind in your mid-40s.
Yeah, and even sports where they're not 1099, even they're not as protected. We're getting better. I think football, you know, people that are walking away from football and just, you know, killing themselves with a suicide note that says, please dissect my brain.
Yep.
I mean, like, that's the ultimate, like, cry right there for help. But
so
yeah, it's pretty brutal.
So walking away from triathlon, like, I was still just a healthy young man. I was pretty darn lucky.
So you're saying that walking away poor is at least better than walking away poor and broken.
With a ticking time bomb in your brain, like, oh, sometime in my mid-40s, I might really have a problem. Or maybe not, but...
Yeah. So, okay, so as a as someone who chased that dream and had been in that realm, what would you give advice to people that are maybe young Devons out there that are trying to... think about, I want to come chase it.
If you're, you know, early 20s, coming out of college, you've just got that bug, you have to be super focused and intentional. And I was very, like, I was obsessed with the sport, and all I thought about was the sport, and all I did was train for the sport, but I was too scatterbrained about a lot of the important stuff, and that being race selection. So I would Pick a race, justify it. I'm smart enough to make a great argument for things. So I would pick races, justify them. I'm like, oh, this makes sense because of this, this, this. And then maybe I wasn't fully emotionally committed to doing it or doing my best there. Or maybe I would, you know, a few weeks out, just change my plans. So I wasn't intentional enough about the trajectory of what I was doing.
Would that have, if you had somebody that you were using as more of an interactive coach, do you think that would have helped? Because you've had a different experience with different types of coaching, yep, and different styles of coaches, and I know that probably the last coaches you've had did not live up to, I think, some of the things that you were looking for or that you really needed.
Yeah, I think having someone throughout, you know, my 10-year career to consistently say, like, okay, short course now, okay, you're ready for halves, focus on this one and this one, and no, quit. Stop thinking about other ones. Because a lot of the time with pro, you have that luxury to jump in a race.
Or yep.
Or like, oh, I heard about a race that's paying out. Like, oh, and run, you know, you run off and do it, and you compromise your planned training for a race, a bigger race, 3 weeks down the road.
Squirrel.
So being, I was much too much of that all throughout my pro years because I had the luxury to choose. Or if I want to drop out of this Ironman, I can get another one in a month. Who cares?
Do you think that looking back as older Devin to younger Devin, would younger Devin have listened to that though?
Maybe not.
Yeah,
I'm pretty stubborn. You know that.
I do, and yeah. So I'm looking at this because I feel like you have a lot to offer other people who were in your place. Yep. So if you were working with a younger athlete that was like you,
yep,
what are the things that would have made you listen or would have made you say, oh yeah, I need to listen to this person? What were the things that you didn't get?
Well, I just didn't have a consistent voice that I was listening to throughout the years. You know, because I went, I hired a very expensive professional coach for 18 months. But that time together, that 18 months isn't long enough to really shape what you're doing.
Yeah.
So I didn't have, for myself, I didn't think consistently throughout the years about what races I'm choosing to do, how I'm choosing to prepare, what I'm getting into. And then, you know, because I jumped from one coach and then I worked with a friend who was coaching me, I didn't have that consistent through line that I would have been very beneficial.
Got it. The big thing now today is the DTEs, the daily training environments.
DTEs?
That's a big thing.
Okay.
So daily training environments, the units, the clubs. Not a club like as in triathlon club, but, you know, like the Wollongong Wizards, I think, kind of started this, the fad of DTEs. You know, we have them at the Olympic Training Center. Would something like that have been something that you think you could have, that your personality could have gelled into or had benefited from?
It would have been amazing to participate in one of those because, yeah, those high-end training groups where it's a cluster of pros around one high-end coach.
Mm-hmm.
So my pro coach, who I paid a gratuitous amount of money to, was a guy who does that.
Mm-hmm.
And he has his little core group, and there are ITU folks. So his goal is to coach a gold medalist in the Olympics, I'm yep. sure. And he's subsidizing his lifestyle, jetting around to random locations to train with his people by a couple of satellite pros like myself paying $500 a month. It's a good business model.
If you can do it. Because
you can literally, he would literally copy and paste training weeks, which is fine because I don't mind, you know, that there's a lot of benefit to that. But it's like if you're getting paid $500 a month and it's copy and paste.
You're not getting what you needed.
It's yeah. So one of those would have been super fun. It, you know, that environment would have been amazing, and yeah, certainly you're going to excel as an athlete. Would that have worked for me? No. How would I have supported myself?
Well, I mean, you could say
how would I live? Because those people, if you're living on the teat of USAT or your governing body, it's all good.
Or you're living not in poverty, but you're just living almost in a commune style. But you know, we do see some of those in the junior programs. Like you could argue that the MJET program was a DTE to a limited extent. There was not the day to day because of the dynamic between all of you. But you know, in the junior realm, you have school and all those things.
I wouldn't compare them because I'm what you've described with DT. I'm thinking of the half dozen groups that are out there. You go to the training location.
You live there.
You live there, live and breathe with your coach and your training partners.
Yep.
And you just travel for races, and then you move to the next training location. And that's not how do you work a part-time job.
You don't. And there's that. Yeah, and you. I don't think you can. You have to. I think for people that do that, they save money. Much like how Bob Roll, you know, got himself into cycling. He talks about how he won a big race in Colorado and basically funded himself to live in like a garage of a guy's house in Belgium for 2 years or in Switzerland.
Oh, wow.
And so that would, you know, you basically have to almost be okay with living kind of hand to mouth, scrap to scrap.
Of those groups, it's my bias that most of them are ITU focused. Are any of them long course focused?
Not many of them are long course. I mean, you could say that the long course, if I had to say one that I know Siri runs a DTE kind of out of her house, that is mostly long course focused.
Okay.
But I don't know of many others. I don't think Sutton does one out of like where he is from.
But historically, that's been his jam.
It was his jam. I mean, Cliff English had one until he started working at ASU. You know, you had some of those, but they're not there as much anymore. Mainly, I mean, Ironman's changed his model. The how they kind of go back and forth. Where are we going to have pros? Are we not going to have pros? Are we going to have like some races? We're going to pay them. We're not going to pay them much.
No, I think with Ironman, the other thing I look back on is I learned to start self-promoting during my triathlon career. But I didn't figure out how to really commodify it very well. And I do look at guys like Chris McDonald or even AJ Bauko, who have said, okay, I've got whatever following I've got, and I'm going to find a way to commodify it.
Yeah.
So they do their own club, they do their own, a bigger coaching company. So they've taken the next logical steps, to provide value for people who are interested in what they've got going on. And, you know, then the athlete AJ or, McDonald, they get some financial stability out of it. So yeah. I look at them like, okay, you guys nailed it. Like you didn't, you know, AJ probably made about as much cash as I did racing, maybe a little bit more, because he had some success in the last few years with one of those short course series around the country. But he was brilliant in his marketing and his creation of that program.
Yeah. Blake Becker has one.
Yep.
You know, in Wisconsin. He's still racing.
Yep.
And, you know, racing maybe not to the same level, but I think the more that you have to, the more your age catches up with you, and the more you have to create that juggernaut behind you to sustain it, it is going to be difficult to keep the focus that you originally had immediately on training, because now you're working more on the side hustle just to sustain the dream.
Yeah,
and that might be a self sustaining prophecy that you're gonna go down in a big circle of.
Focus too much on the
it's at some point in time you're focusing too much on what's getting you to the next place versus actually getting and being ready for the next place, because it's difficult to have dual focuses, which is arguably one of the things that separates all the top pros, you know, their mental focus and their
total commitment. And that's this DTE lifestyle.
Yeah. But it's all the thing, and it's all mentally, that's all they're right there.
Or you read about, I always loved reading books about the Kenyans, and it's like they live a very simple life.
Yeah, but that's very similar.
They're getting up, they're running.
Yep.
Have some breakfast, take a nap, go for a run. Have some lunch, take a nap, go for another run.
It's kind of like, day. Yeah, it's kind of like the Nike house out in Oregon.
Yeah, but they have, in Kenya.
Except for it's in Kenya.
They have many fewer distractions.
Yeah. They also have different motivators as well.
Yeah.
You know, you think about and this is where I asked why you were doing it, is that you have mental focus, distractions, but motivators also, I think, play a huge key in that as well. If we don't have a good motivator, if you don't know, and number one, if you don't know what's motivating you, then you're screwed. But number two, you have to be motivated by the right thing. If you're just motivated by fame and fortune, well, are you chasing it for the right reasons, and is that going to be able to sustain you through the hard times?
Yep.
versus if I'm doing this because I feel that this is going to be a stepping stone in my longer term career, or I'm driven because this is something I've always wanted to achieve for a long period of time because it's a, you know, an accomplishment, then that's different. So I think those need to be known. So we never really talked about your prediction for Kona. Do you have, if because we both think, both agreed that Danielle is going to be our number one for on the female side. How about on the men's side?
Pretty simple. Andrew Starkiewicz.
Jesus.
He's going to do it. He's going to do it. He's going to win one for the big boys. He's going to win one for the bikers. He's going to win one for the Midwest.
Oh, man.
He's going to pull it out this year. He's going to ride a 357.
Okay.
So he's going to ride a 357. He's going to run a 252. Okay. And a little Alistair Brownlee on his little tippy toes. Alistair's going to be 20 minutes behind him.
20 minutes
He's
behind.
He's going to destroy Alistair Brownlee.
All right, so is that really your prediction?
That is 100% my prediction.
Okay, who's your dark horse?
Who would be a good dark horse to pick?
Is it Tim Don? Was he the one that's coming back from?
No, he's not going to win. He's too old.
I'm just saying.
No, not Tim Don. I met him. He's got wild hair.
He does. He's got nice hair.
He's got wild hair. Who... I'm gonna be patriotic. I'm gonna go a nice Ben Hoffman.
All right, lucky. That's a low bar. So who's your dark horse on the women's side?
Women's side is Heather Wirtle Racing.
I believe so. Yes.
If she's racing, she's my pick.
She's your dark horse. Yep. I'm gonna go with Sarah True as my dark horse. She was my dark horse last year. I know her personally, so I feel like I got to keep rooting for her because I think she's got the chops. I think she could do it. I'm going to predict Alistair Brownlee. That's going to be mine. And then my dark horse is going to be... TJ Tolleson.
TJ? He's not racing, is he?
I don't know.
He's another dad.
I know. I just
think... There's a guy. I respect that guy because he's a dad. Yeah. He's got his business going. He runs Diamond Bikes.
If he's out there, I'm going to pick him. But no, I'll say Andy Potts is going to be mine because he's always on the line.
He's racing so
I would have chosen Craig Alexander because I have a huge, huge crush on Crowey, personally.
Craig's the man.
He's
still racing. Like, he's still winning half Ironmans.
He's the Hugh Jackman of triathlon. Let's just be honest. Because Hugh Jackman is like the complete package, right? Yep. I think Craig Alexander is the Hugh Jackman of triathlon. And that, I'm just going to leave it at that.
No, I don't disagree whatsoever.
All right. Well,
Before we get going, we're just going to dive into a couple of quick shout outs here.
Okay.
Because unlike you, I believe in marketing. I believe in self-promotion.
So in case people don't understand what this is all about, Devin announced that he was going to be on the show on Facebook. And
because
said,
I'm a good guest.
Because he's a good self-promoter, and he promised that he would drop people's names in the show.
Cole, from my office. Hey, you're going to win. You're going to be a city councilman. Go for it, okay?
Vote for Cole.
Scott Foland. I don't know who you are.
Scott Fullen is one of my old clients, and he has the Endurance City podcast.
He says, but I like Cervelo bicycles. Scott Fullen, I looked at your profile. You have no pictures of a Cervelo bicycle. Get out of my face if you don't actually have a Cervelo. Get a Cervelo or, okay?
Wow.
Get your life together, Scott.
Wow. Scott, I like you still.
Joe Niskowski.
I don't know. Okay. Who's that?
Former client of mine. Did an Ironman. Stud. Moved to Texas. Good guy. Plays hockey. He's pretty ripped. I respect him.
All right. I give him that.
Jacob Scheckman. Listen. Don't reply to someone else's comment. Get your own shout out. Okay, he's trying to piggyback off Joe's.
Uh-oh.
So Jacob, get your life together. Okay, you're too old for this. Aaron Ward, out of St. Paul, incredible runner.
Mm-hmm.
I saw her last. I said she had a mullet. She said I'm going to go get a haircut. Okay, I bullied her a little bit.
Why? You hair shamed her.
Follicles, I sure did.
Follicle shame.
I sure did. Aaron, incredible tutor. If your kids are in the metro and they're preparing for the ACT or SAT. Call Aaron. She's great.
All right.
Cat lady, too.
Ugh.
Brad Kopp. Okay. Do you know Brad Kopp?
No.
You wouldn't because he looked homeless for years. He chose to look homeless. Then he got a haircut, and now he looks handsome. Okay. So, Brad, keep it up. Keep getting haircuts, bud.
It works. Look at you. You didn't have a haircut for a long time.
Listen.
You looked like a squish. You looked like a Nerf ball.
Up until 2017, like just prior to my wedding, did I start getting professional haircuts and using product in my hair.
That's because you didn't have money then and you married up.
But I do look back at photos like, ooh, that was a mistake.
Yeah, you should have put a little product in there.
Brad Kopp, keep getting haircuts. He wanted a shout out also to our friend Eric Rolstad.
Okay.
Eric's very handsome. Okay?
Okay.
Megan Menard, you didn't understand my request. Megan Menard tried to shout my child out. It's like, no, I'm giving you a shout out, okay? So get it right.
Read the rules.
Travis Jeffrey, you are a dork, Travis. Please discuss in detail where all the Wisconsin Bike Course hills originated from. Glacial migration or Paul Bunyan's axe? You're a dork.
Paul Bunyan's axe, duh.
Do you know Travis?
No, but I'm just going to say Paul Bunyan's axe.
I'm going to send him a strongly worded email.
Uh-oh.
Kurt Christensen, you're an adult man with a ponytail. Stop it.
Hey, he can grow a ponytail.
And stop
he
it.
He works on a farm. He is the hardest working man in showbiz right now. If you look at his, he can do more in a day, Devin, than you can do an entire year.
Kurt, move out of Iowa. Iowa stinks. It's a bad state. No one likes it there, okay?
Wow, that's aggressive.
Cut off your ponytail.
Don't cut off your ponytail, Kurt.
Kirby.
Puckett? Puckett?
No, Kirby. Skrat. His last name is terrible. He's
arguably his first name could be better as well.
You don't like Kirby?
Not for a grown-up.
Oh,
unless you're either a Nintendo character or a Twins like Hall of Famer or All Star, no.
Well, he spells it with an E, not an I. Didn't Kirby Puckett spell it with an I?
No, it was with a Y, dude.
No, in the middle.
Yeah, K-I.
Yeah, Kirby's is K-E.
Well, anyway. At least it's not K-U because that would be.
That would be Kirby.
Kirby with a K, Kirby? With a U and an I. Anyways,
Kirby is my cube mate. He has this app he made me get called Voxer, which is basically a walkie-talkie app. So he treats me like a cube mate, like sends me dumb notes throughout the day, which I also, of course, send back to him. So
of course.
He's my cube mate. Shout out to my cube mate. Mark Michelle, okay? Formerly Dark Mark of Twitter.
Oh.
One of my best friends in this world. We are on a text group with Matt Lieto. Matt Lieto might be breaking up with us. He doesn't reply that much anymore. Matt Lieto, get your life together, okay?
Did Mark retire from Twitter?
He did retire from Twitter.
Oh, okay.
Yep. He, like me, has a newborn baby.
And
good
a
for
life.
You, Mark.
And a life now.
He finally got a life.
Thank you.
Salute to you, Mark. My baby's better. Alex Turner. Alex Turner is a young man, moved to California, pursuing the dream of being a pro cyclist. Alex, you don't have an aerobic system. You can barely ride 200 watts for 2 hours. Alex, be better at aerobic exercise, okay? You want to be a pro cyclist? Get better.
Choose cyclocross.
Okay. Actually, that's probably a good point.
Yeah.
No, he did alpine skiing, so he can handle a bike really well. He's got, like, the agility. But he just aerobically. Alex, I'm telling you.
All right.
Sam, okay? Your name is Sam. You don't have any hair. You're a very good bike mechanic.
Sam.
He's one of the wrenches over at Now in St. Paul.
Okay.
He's done a couple of bikes for me. It's immaculate work.
Good work. Okay.
And he's...
Is his real last name Sam as well?
No, on Facebook, he identifies himself as Samuel Sam.
Gotcha.
He's Sam.
Yep.
Kayla Gustafson, real estate broker.
Mm-hmm.
Just looking for a free shout out. All these realtors.
How dare you put somebody else... I'm surprised you actually acknowledged another realtor on your...
Kirby, who I mentioned earlier, we discussed his name and how it's kind of a subpar name. Also a realtor.
Okay.
But you know what? I'm a big guy.
You are.
It's a big pond.
You can walk around with moccasins without socks. I mean, that shows a lot.
Chris, they're loafers.
Those are moccasins. Those are like Minnetonka moccasins. They have little knobbies on the bottom. Don't argue. It's already been proven. Scientific fact. Next.
Kayla Gustafson is the broker at High Point Realty, boutique local brokerage out of Lake Elmo. Chris Haas, first of all, stop being so proud of your cubicle. He posted a picture like, I've been living in this cubicle for 15 years and I moved 3 inches over this way. Stop it. Don't be proud of spending 15 years in a cubicle,
Chris. Keep shopping at Target Richfield, though, Chris. That's where I seen Chris last.
Well, he's gone because he gave up the South Minneapolis lifestyle. He had the second kid and they're like, boom, we're going to Plymouth.
I know. They just built a house, didn't they?
Bought mid-construction? Mid-construction, D.R. Okay. Horton. Chris, who is your realtor? Not me. A guy from my office, so I can't be that mad.
I like Chris Haas. Leave him alone.
I like him, too. I have a lot of things to say about him. Let's just leave it at.
All right.
He didn't pick me. Hurts my feelings. I'm very mad. I'm not mad, but I'm very mad. Karen Langer. Okay? You run Dusty Neighbor Wines out of California. You're part of a vineyard, and I've seen none of this wine. I want that wine. It's very good wine from what I've heard.
Send some samples.
Dusty Neighbor Wines.
Got it.
Out of California.
Let's go.
Let me see the wine.
Mm-hmm.
Adam Warden. Okay? Adam. I'm not going to just insult Bart because you said so. Bart Halloran, okay, who is bespeckled with tattoos, just a smattering of sloppy, careless tattoos acquired earlier in life. Just a lot of mistakes. It's not Bart's fault. He did Iron Man one time, then he went and did cycling. He got into Nature Valley Grand Prix one year, crashed out. That's Bart, okay? No one has had more cataclysmic crashes than Bart.
Oh.
Okay, and Adam, be nicer, be more respectful.
Okay? Yeah. Adam shouldn't just throw people under the bus randomly. He should.
Yeah. Be a good guy.
He should go back to triathlons. He needs to do an Ironman. I'm gonna call Adam out that he needs to do an Ironman before he starts.
His profile picture is still in him in a tri-suit. Is he not racing?
He does. Not like, you know, like he's not like actively training and racing. Like we did have a pathway towards Paralympics at one point in time, but a little too late in the quad to jump in. And so, but you know, he's raced draft legal. We raced down in Sarasota.
Hey, Adam, chase the dream, bud. Okay.
I'm here for you.
Forget career. Forget your wife and kids.
He knows my
none
name.
Of
no,
that matters.
Do not sacrifice your
none
family.
None of that matters. Thank Speaking you. As a dad, you know, a recently newly, like only for a few years, I've been an employed adult with a wife and now a child.
Don't do
forget
that.
All that. Give it all up. You could be living a threadbare lifestyle with no financial rewards and no rewards of any kind. Pursue triathlon to the highest level.
Yep. No. Don't just look at what Peter Reed did. Just don't be a hermit.
Don't.
No. Next.
Nope. That's it. That's all the shout-outs and all the slander. That's
all the shouts and slanders we have for today. All right.
You were so against that. It's the best segment. People are going to love that segment of the show. God,
it's no one cares about it. It's just because you start throwing a bunch of names out there and pimp yourself.
Well, hey, listen.
Create your own content and don't ride the piggyback tails of other people.
Listen, I'm trying to spruce up your show. People have been talking. It's a little. Your show's a little down. Numbers are down. Okay, and I'm trying to help you out.
Yeah. Really? Yeah. Okay. I'll tell you what. When this episode gets more listens than episode 14,
who is 14?
Kevin O'Connor. Who? Or episode 20.
What was my first?
Nicole Curtis.
What were my?
If you make it to the podium, if you can make it to the podium, or even get knock one of those two off, then I will acknowledge that what you do has some sort of positive impact. Until then, I'm going to see this as like a snarky like troll shark from the side.
No, Kevin O'Connor basically runs a mini ranch of his own. Okay, like basically in Siberia. Okay, so no one's interested.
Not Siberia. It's Orono.
Point to me on a map where those are two different places.
It's true. Well, they're relatively close. I think they're in a very close parallel.
No, Nicole.
I'm just telling you where the bar was set, I'm just telling you, you have to know where the bar is set in order to train and try and reach to something.
And yet you're mad at me for trying to achieve something.
I'm not mad.
Why
am I mad? Have I ever been mad?
And I'm being literal.
Defensive, absolutely, but not mad.
You literally yelled and screamed. It was awkward. We're here in play try. This is not our place.
I know. We were like there were people looking at us. Yeah. When
you were yelling.
The employees
and
actually have been actively moving away from us as this has been going on.
You were so mad. I opted voluntarily to promote your thing.
No, I was more mad that I asked you just to bring simply coffee for me today.
I'm sorry to
include you as a guest and actually work around your schedule, not my schedule, working around your schedule, and I got a big bunch of attitude. That's all I got. But
attitude,
you know what?
And promotion.
But bad on me for anticipating or even expecting anything differently, because for the years that I've known you, I've gotten zero respect ever. And
I can't see why you would expect that to change.
The only thing I've ever gotten out of you is I've gotten a nookie supreme out of you. That's on an annual basis. On an annual basis, that's the only thing I've ever gotten out of you.
And Chris,
and that was only recently because you didn't really have a job. I was me buying you those for so long.
And Chris, insanity. The definition of insanity is doing the same thing and expecting a different result.
Oh my God!
You're doing the same things. By
inviting you on, I am doing the same thing, and I'm just not getting any different results.
You're gonna get the same result.
The same result is nothing.
Why would I change my brand?
Well, as much as I would love to keep ranting and railing with you, Devin, we both have other things we need to do. You probably have to go feed your child or take them out of the cage or wherever you were.
Take her away from my wife briefly.
Mm-hmm. Give your wife a break, which would be good. So,
Devin Palmer, realtor.
Oh, Jesus. So check Devin out on the internet. Devin, what's your website?
AndersonPalmer.com or AndersonPalmerRealEstate.com.
And how can somebody get a hold of you?
651-707-4494. 651-707-4494.
That's
Devon, at AndersonPalmer.com. Devon, at AndersonPalmer.com. Buy or sell your house?
Yeah,
Come on, let's go.
A terrible jingle, by the way. You need to get like 1-800-CARS for kids or something.
Listen, my dream of winning Ironman Wisconsin.
Never is going to happen.
No, it's never going to happen. My first closing, I made that amount of money. I was like, this industry is way better than triathlon.
Telling you, being a grown-up pays off sometimes.
Oh, I'm super excited to be an adult.
All right, well, go sell some houses. houses. Until then, we'll both be watching Kona, yep, or at least read the synopsis and listen to everybody slam all the results. So,
is your co-host going to be here the next podcast?
Yep, Gabby will be back. Okay. Gabby will be back.
Gabby's, does she know I'm trying to take her job?
I'm sure she probably
made that
does.
Clear enough?
I think she probably knows that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. So we'll see who will show up for the next one.
Okay.
We'll see.
Okay.
Only time. TikTok.
Look at the numbers. Let the market speak. Look at the numbers.
TikTok. You show me the numbers. I have a way of tracking it. I can see exactly who's going. So, well, we appreciate PlayTry for letting us sit and crash on their couch and drink their coffee and consume their space here today. If you get a chance, hop down to PlayTry in Eagan, Minnesota. They will hook you up with all kinds of stuff here. We have all kinds of things to try. And check out their club programs. They're very good, and they are very beneficial for upcoming athletes. So for Devin Palmer, I am Chris Swarthout. This is the Be Better Podcast, and we will see you next time.